you know, past generations, our ancestors, have experienced some level of this kind of constant feed need to kind of like be responsible in some way, shape, or form to get to this level of like freedom and opportunity that we now have.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, if I can say all the future generations have done something really goddamn right for me to be where I'm at. Like, it's my job to tell stories for a living. It's so crazy to me.
Instead of doing such a crazy hard work like they had to do before.
But I still do that hard work.
Yeah, but you're doing
that. I'm doing it purely out of like, well, number one, working out with you, that's like purely out of like, well, let me do it for the gram or do it for myself or do it for whatever version of that, right?
Yeah.
It's a bit of all of it. Like, we have to admit, like, there's a part of me that says, yeah. Like, this is welcome to the Superhero Academy podcast. I'm your host, Arcangel. I'm not going to lie, I am a little bit tired from leading up into this podcast. I've got what has now become a phenomenal friend, Charo Ciampini, who's joining me here. He's my personal trainer. So anybody who follows me on social media or has been watching my Instagram stories as of late, you probably know that I'm on some kind of 100-day, superhero body challenge. It started with 40 days. It's ended up in 100 days. I kind of knew it was going to do that anyway. And Charo here is somebody who I met, I don't know, like a few weeks before. We met outside of
having coffee.
Dispense a coffee shop. The local coffee shop in my building that fuels my life. If you haven't checked out Dispense a Coffee Shop in Montreal, you're missing out.
Best pre-workout in town.
Yeah. It's this is exactly my pre-workout at 8 a.m., my 8 a.m. Training sessions. So yeah, Charo here, who basically lives in the Old Port here in Montreal, personal trainer. Obviously, we're, you know, in the pandemic. This is like the time. It's either the time where people gain 15 pounds or get shredded. And I would imagine that most people have gained 15 pounds.
I'd probably say the bigger part of the population is not doing too well with that. No access to a gym, nowhere to work out, and trying to push yourself on your own is not the easiest thing to do.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for, number one, joining, and number two, kicking my ass on a regular basis. Now it's my time. You entered, as you said earlier, my dojo.
Yeah. This is your space.
Yeah. But before I give you some tough questions, one of the things that we just did earlier is I call it it's now affectionately named the Charo Special, and I would love for you to explain to the audience here the kind of nonsense, the kind of crazy that you send our way. So basically, Charo gives me a deck of cards. And it gives instructions, and these instructions were a little bit different than the ones we did today, but why don't you run them down the flow that we did today?
So, looking for a house workout, this is one of my favorite ones, easy to do, and changes every single time.
Yeah.
So, basically, you have your cards, each suit has an exercise. Yeah. For me, the spades is always the one we don't like to do,
yeah.
Like a burpee or a pull-up or something that's going to be high intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Diamonds, we always want to have abs, so you want to be cut like an ab.
Yeah.
So I always put that there. Hearts is always a push-up.
Yeah.
And then clubs is always a leg. So yeah. You can do that separation however you want. The fun part is you can change it up every single time.
Yeah. See, the difference is that you're doing all 52 cards. So basically the cards are face down, you flip a card, and now you have two push-ups, right? So then you flip the next card, now you have 10 burpees and two burpees, and then seven, ab crunches or whatever it is, and so on and so forth. Now, the difference is that this kicks your ass, absolutely kicks your ass when it comes to, the aces are the worst because it's 10 of every exercise.
That's my add-on. I like that
yeah.
one.
Yeah, this is where it gets into the Charo Special.
What's fun about that is we have the exercises, but we don't, there's no pause. You have no pause.
Yeah. Yeah. Because today you were like, oh, it's a race.
It's usually a race, and it's a good, you could do it to yourself, redo the same workout and see if you're getting better at it or worse at it. So it's a good marker in terms of timing.
Yeah.
And it's never the same thing.
Yeah. You know what? It always sounds a little harder than it actually ends up being. You know what I mean? Like today, look, don't get me wrong. I got my ass kicked today, But at the same time, it's like, it feels like it was like unbelievably undoable at the beginning. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It feels like there's no way I'm going to get through this actual workout when you first lay out like, okay, wait, you're going to do, you know,
jump lunges.
Jump lunges.
Sliding push-ups even harder.
Yeah, sliding push-ups.
Sliding plank.
Yeah.
And then what was the last one? Burpees. Oh, yeah, my favorite one.
Yeah. How do you forget the burpees?
Because I do them too often. I always forget them.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the trick. Sometimes we sit there and we'll think about something. Like if I tell you to do 200 burpees right now,
yeah,
you probably tell me to go do something with myself.
First of all, this is an explicit podcast.
Yes.
You could swear all you want.
Perfect.
Yeah.
You'd be literally, like you're talking upstairs, you'd be like, oh, fuck that. Yeah. What the fuck is that? What's wrong with you?
Oh, there's no way I can run a podcast without swearing. It's just a part of my vocabulary at this point.
And it's a good way to express yourself.
It
adds emphasis where it needs to be.
The many shades of fuck are just perfect. Like, no, the use, I mean, look, this is a joke. You know, I'm not going to recant the joke, but there's so many uses to the word fuck that add layers of like, it just adds layers of context that I feel like no other word can nail.
Yeah, and it depends on the tone and where you're putting it. There's fun little things to do with that.
Yeah. So speaking of saying fuck all the time, because I say it very often when you describe what the workout is of the day.
Yep, or after the workout or during the workout.
Yeah, first of all, give us a little bit of background and then tell me a little bit of the story of, you know, how you do what you do right now and what led you to doing some of this stuff. And then I'll share a little bit of like what this superhero challenge, body challenge is kind of shaping up to be, and I'll get into that a little bit.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So how I do what I do, I guess we could start where I started.
Yeah.
I've been training my whole life. I've been in sports, doing all kinds of fun different things. I've tried almost every sport under the sun.
Yeah.
And not under the sun. And then a couple of years back, I had basically in my 30s, I started trying to find health.
Mm.
I didn't have a good health life before that. In my 20s, I was drinking, doing drugs, and doing everything you could possibly think of.
Yeah.
In my 30s, I actually found volleyball, which was surprisingly enough the catalyst to wanting to be healthy because I wanted to be good at volleyball.
Mm.
So then I started training regularly for myself to become good at the sport.
Mm.
Then people want to train with me. And then eventually people want to train with you. So you start thinking, can you make this a business?
Really amazing how people do really want to train with you. Like all I started to do is share that I'm training on Instagram. And the number of people were like, wait, can I join these? Like, can I come to this? Like, can you help me? What about my journey? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's absolutely amazing how quickly, I guess, you can go from like, I don't know, not a personal trainer to being a personal trainer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, obviously, I'm not going to discount all the knowledge that goes into understanding the body, muscle groups, different training programs. Like, I'm far from an expert. I'm not a personal trainer. I'm not trying to be a personal trainer. But it is amazing how it is. Well, we live in the world where, like, any influencer can just be anything all of a sudden, just because they said they changed their Instagram bio.
Or they put a picture somewhere. Everybody's like, oh, that looks amazing. I want to do that too.
Yeah. Speaking of Instagram bios, before you continue.
Yes.
Charo's Instagram bio.
My non-so-existent bio. It's very short and brief.
Yeah. I mean, but you got some good pictures there, though. You're pretty cut. You're in good shape. I like the style of your photography. You know what I mean? Like the photos that you have here definitely scream you.
Which is an amazing thing. Yeah.
That's what you want.
The photos and the words. Hopefully I'm getting the right words to the photo to get the right attention I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Not to put out something that I'm not, to actually put out what I am.
Yeah. And that's kind of how you and I met, right? It was like you were training one of my neighbors who's down the hall, Felix, and I was like, hey, I know something about social media storytelling and that kind of stuff. And we kind of had like this, okay, how about you teach me and I teach you kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And that just turned into, well, wait a second, I actually kind of want to do a superhero body challenge. Now, I'm pretty sure my description of it was, I want to do the workouts that it would take to get the next Batman role. Like, what's the equivalent of what I need to eat and do and work out to get the next Batman role? And you're like, well, wait, what are some of your like specific goals? I'm like, to work out the bitch in me.
I remember that. And he said that a few times.
I've said it multiple times. Yeah, multiple times.
Yeah.
You've only brought it up like once or twice in terms of training, though, in terms of like, are you trying to work out the bitch in you or is that the bitch in you speaking right now?
I think it's getting, am I getting more comfortable with you now? So now I can like poke at you a little bit. I'm like, all right, here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My brother's perfect at that, too. He's phenomenal. Yeah. He's phenomenal at poking
fun. I was going to say, like, clearly it hasn't worked yet. So.
Nah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's getting better.
I think you need like another decade of breaking down my ego and then maybe.
Let's see if we can get through the winter, see what happens after that.
Yeah. Well, we still have another 45, 44-ish days, something like that. We're somewhere on day 55 or 56, to be honest. I'm lost count.
Yeah, I don't pay attention.
Yeah. But what I love about this, and I've decided that this is something I'm going to do yearly, is September 21st, which is an equinox, it's an important day. I tend to do psychedelics or whatever it is as a marker. But it's perfect for the 40-day challenge if you wanted to do something right before Halloween.
Yeah.
Just kind of like a little quick, you know, powwow. And it's also 100 days from the end of the year, from the December 31st.
So it ends up being perfectly
so
right.
So it's like a perfect little window where it's like, okay, what level of intensity do you want to go at? And so now I'm realizing that every year I'm going to do some level of like a physical or spiritual or an emotional challenge of some kind. Last year, I went to
ayahuasca.
Peru and did ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Which was in and of itself a nice little journey.
It's on my to-do list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What was amazing about ayahuasca was, and I keep telling people this, it wasn't even the medicine itself for me personally. It was actually the dieta and the whole leading up to it. Right? It was like the whole, like, wait a second, I know I'm living out of alignment here. Here are the things that I know I shouldn't be doing or that I should be doing in some way, shape, or form. And then how do I start to, like, negotiate with myself and align myself so that I'm, like, hopefully Mother Aya doesn't destroy me in the Maloka, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, hopefully she doesn't rip me to shreds and take my ego and stomp it, and all of a sudden I have Kumbaya come to Jesus moment and I quit everything and start living in the jungles.
Which is still very possible.
It's very possible, but it didn't happen.
Not yet. Maybe no, next time.
Didn't happen. Still here in Montreal, still here in the old port. I came home.
And now you have to survive the winter.
Gonna take
But it's funny. It's the same concept of you walked in with a goal and you're enjoying the journey more than you're actually enjoying the goal. The like kind of like took its time off, and now you're learning to be healthier, be happier, be physical, be this, be that.
Yeah.
So you're picking up a lot as that happens.
I know, but I suck at that though. Like I suck at I'm such a hater of my own self.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And what I mean by that is like, even in our workouts, I've been telling you, I'm like, I think we're about like 60%.
Yeah.
And we're about just over 50% of the way through this 100-day challenge, but I'm like, oh, I think we're still about like 60%. Now, luckily, we just nailed down some of the food side of it. We got the meal prep deal going down, which
will help a lot.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a big game changer. Just because I was still like, look, I wasn't cooking. Let's be fucking honest. But I was still eating like poke bowls and like I was doing good. But you know, it's definitely the consistency is there when you have like specific meals and have more of those meals.
And they're available when you need them.
Exactly. The second I'm hungry or like
right
I'm
after workout,
call,
go.
Right Man. After workout, get
when you
that.
Go. Exactly. So you're not going to skip a meal, which is something that's super important.
Yeah.
And you're also going to get the right stuff in you.
Yeah. Which is usually helpful.
Yeah.
Now, I love the approach that you have to personal training when it comes to, you know, I think why I resonate with what you do is that you have a kind of a unique lens to the way that you train people.
Okay.
So it's, and maybe you know about it.
Maybe I don't. I was about to ask him, like, what is this lens?
No,
you're
well,
about?
What I mean by that is like our training is not us going to the gym and maxing out on how much I can bench press, right? So we're not doing strongman training. We're actually doing functional fitness and movement training,
yep.
Right? We're bringing in, like, okay, what is it like to have boxing incorporated, right? And now we're talking about adding in calisthenics or whatever it is, right? So we're adding in all these different layers. And talk to me a little bit about your philosophy around living a healthy lifestyle.
Mm. So where did this come from? I guess for me, I've always done stuff. So knowing that the times that I tried to put on this big bulky weight, it took away from my athleticism. It took away from certain parts of me. It did give me that look that I wanted,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't give me the result that I was looking for.
Yeah.
So to be better on a volleyball court, I need to be quick, dynamic, and fast.
Yeah.
I don't need to be big, bulky, and slow.
Yeah.
So I like that approach. But also, I mean, as a human, what do we do? Half the time, we're not moving in that one pattern all the time. We're not just sitting up and down and going left and right. We move in every which direction.
Yeah.
And I found for me, like I've done a lot of CrossFit. I've done a lot of this. I've done a lot. I haven't had any injuries in 4 years.
Mm.
I've been injury free for 4 years since I've started doing everything else. So I've been doing kettlebells, sports, sprinting, anything you could put in there. I'm always playing around, but my body's used to moving in every which direction now.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't. In my head, that correlates to I'm used to being safe in every position,
mm.
which is something that we don't learn to do a lot.
Well, and we're not maxing out on just like when we're doing chest, for example, we're doing like, okay, upper chest, middle chest, lower chest. Like we're really trying to round out the power dynamic and spread it into all the smaller muscles, all the layers of definition.
All the little
and then,
things.
And then being patient with it.
And also we're playing with different things too. We're playing with tempo, time, things that like,
yes,
I'm not offsets. Just going to go 1-2, 1-2. I'm doing, yeah. Okay, I'm going to do one arm and I do one weight on the other side, one weight on this side.
Yeah.
When is it ever in the world that you're going to do something equally?
Oh yeah. Like a perfect equal rep.
Yeah.
The only time that kind of happens is at a farm. It's a little bit like at a farm, you can kind of get a little bit of a pace when you're shoveling or when you're like,
yeah, you but know. Every time you pick up that shovel, it's not the same weight.
Yeah.
It's a little off balance. You're not.
Don't get me wrong.
But that's it. Those little minute things that I'm like, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the number one way to be the strongest human ever is just be a farmer.
I went with you one day. I agree.
Yeah. It's true. But that's one of our workouts was go and make rows and then shovel and then prepare for garlic beds, basically.
But I think that's why you had a good base when you came in.
Yes.
Because you'd already been doing stuff like that for a while. So you had the fit farm, I would say, like farmer strength.
Yes.
Now I just had to play around with it and see like, okay, we'll push the tempo here. We'll try this out and we'll see where you can go in other areas.
Yeah.
You already had the strength.
But I feel like it's so funny because I sit here now and I still feel like small. I still feel like not really at capacity. But I think that's my obsession with pushing the limits. It's not just like what is actually true. It's like this thing that I feel because I just really want to like hit the boundaries of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What is it?
Isn't that something that happens to like pretty much everybody once they start getting into the rhythm of working out that we start like we're bigger than we were before and yet we feel like we're smaller and we just like we want to hit this like new break point or something.
Yeah.
Like that happens to me all the time. Every time someone like looks at me when I've been like training my most, I'm like, I'm small. And they're like, dude, you look jacked right now. And yeah. I don't know why. Like, I don't understand that.
I tell him that all the time.
Yeah.
he's like, oh, and then he's like, no, I'm not good. I'm not ready. I'm not.
I think it's just what it is just, it's a fuel source.
But isn't it?
I'm not saying it's a good fuel source.
Our human thing always wants more.
Yeah.
Like, are we ever really satisfied with anything? Or is there always a want to have more, be more?
That's a good question.
Have you ever been satisfied with anything? That's another question that I'm like, am I satisfied? Why am I not satisfied? What's happening?
I mean, I've definitely been satisfied in certain moments, obviously. I've gone to a restaurant and been like, this was perfect. Like, this was exactly what I wanted.
Then you go back to next, do you go back there again and being like, oh, we're looking for the same thing or something a little bit more the next time?
No, when it comes to restaurants specifically, I'm like pretty happy with the consistency of something.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, so if I have Boustan's, Montreal favorite, best fucking shishtuk in town.
Yeah.
Hands down has best shishtuk in town in my personal opinion. At least they have the best garlic sauce. And actually, I would say, I'm going to add, Adonis is pretty good, pretty close.
Not bad.
Yeah,
they've been around for a while too, so.
Yeah, they're pretty close. But,
hold on, wait, side track.
Shish tube tangent over there.
Shish track, sorry.
Sponsored content.
Yeah, I know, yeah. And our next sponsor is, I would be fucking happy if I was sponsored by Boustan's.
Boustan's and Dispenza, I'd be perfectly fine.
Yeah, I'm already kind of sponsored by Dispenza because I've got a good thing going with them. I'm not gonna say what I've got going down, but you know, I have eggs, they have coffee. It works out.
I see what goes on.
It works out.
I am enjoying this barter system that we can get sometimes.
Well, barter system. Well, we were saying this the other day. Yeah. Barter system is the number one way around taxation. It's like, and you're technically you're supposed to declare that I got this in kind and you got that in kind, blah, blah, blah. But how do they track that? You know what I mean? Beyond the fact that I just said it on a podcast.
We're not talking. Are they listening? Pay attention.
Do you think that the government is listening? Do they have AI technology?
There's a cell phone right there.
Oh my God.
We're in trouble.
Oh my God. Shit. Yeah. Forget the cell phone. I'm like willingly uploading it to their servers. Like,
yeah. You're like, nope, we're good.
Oh, Spotify. And it's available on all networks all the time.
Yeah.
No,
the barter system is good though. I have a good couple of mixes here with other people and I find that really enjoyable.
Yeah.
Isn't that the way the word should work though for a lot of things? Or used to work at least?
It should's a big word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It improves like the relationship between the barterers.
Well, 100%. That's everyone. I always say this all the time. I say specifically for people who want to do marketing in the form of, let's say you have like a very tangible physical business like yours, right? Like the business of personal training or the business of health and wellness in any way or yogi or whatever. We all want to know a guy or a girl. We all want to know someone that when the pipe breaks, I know a guy.
Yeah.
Right. Or when you need your tires changed, I know a guy. When you need a yogi, I know a woman. You know what I mean? Like you just want that.
You want that in your deck of cards. You want to be able to pull it out and be like, oh, this is the one I need.
Yeah. Instead of fucking the Ace of Spades.
An Ace of Spades, which was your last card later.
I know. I was like, it had to, and I complained about it right before. I was like, oh my God, the Aces.
And the Ace of Spades, which is like the most high value card. Yeah. And it finished there. I was like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. No, couldn't ask for much better than that.
That's my life. My life is constantly this like cosmic joke that's being played out on me. But I do want to circle back to, I think, a very important question, which is like, are you ever satisfied?
I'm trying to learn to be. It's an interesting thing to understand that I always want more from things.
Mm.
Not expecting it from other people is a huge thing, because you always want more from your relationships too. You always want to go get more. So understanding that...
That's funny. I don't feel that way.
I'm better with it now.
Yeah.
But like in partnerships with friends and stuff like that, I'd always want more from my partner or my girlfriends or this and that. Now I can just kind of let things be.
It's funny. I always want more from myself.
Now I'm asking more for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm constantly in a perpetual trauma, self-inflicted trauma loop. Where I'm just like,
you're not doing enough. Yeah. Go quicker.
Like, forget, like, you know, if Julius Caesar had knives in his back, I'm the version of Julius Caesar where I stick them in myself and I'm like, oh my God, you know? No, I expect very little from other people. I think stoicism has brought me that. You know what I mean? Like some level of like my expectations have gone down to a floor. So what other people give me or anything other people do, I'm always amazed. Like, I'm amazed that anybody is listening to this podcast right now.
Okay.
Like, fully amazed. Like, I can't even, I'm like, what? Why? Like, what? You know what I mean? Like, I don't fully grasp it. Now, logically, I'm like, okay, well, there's value. No. People have been following our story. They see some stuff. They want to know a little bit more behind the scenes of who you are and what you do. And so I get it. Like, people follow you, people follow me, they want to know our dynamic, and they're interested in the topic, or they're interested in certain things. Logically, I can get that, but emotionally, I'm like, it's funny, I have no understanding. It's almost like sometimes I'm not human in my own self, you know what I mean? Because I guess I don't consume the way other people consume, and I don't have the expectations other people have.
Okay.
But when it comes to myself, I'm just constantly beating myself up. Which is another story.
I was about to say, is that a good trait to have?
No.
But here's a question. You said stoicism, right?
Yeah.
Where did you learn that?
Books.
Books, yeah. So I like the fact that until we know better, we can't do better.
Yeah. But I find stoicism is a version of do better.
Yeah.
At least when it comes to like my line of work, which is entrepreneurship, it's like there is a constant need for me to interface with other people. And my actual specific role is that I'm kind of like very much like a Professor X kind of vibe. Like I see the superpowers of other people and I'm kind of a mastermind. I'm the kind of like person who connects the dots and says like, let's do this, and rallies the people and builds the X-Men essentially. You know what I mean? Like that's how I operate. But that doesn't mean that I have the expectations of other people. I just like constantly am criticizing like, oh, maybe I can do this a little bit better. Maybe I can get like, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm always just tweaking just whatever. Like, and even these things, it's like, it bothers me that this button right over here, this laugh, you know, or this applause track or whatever, that I don't yet have this all set up.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So there's always like the next little detail. Like I'm always just pushing it a little bit further, you know? And I feel like that's where my expectations get painted onto other people, is they become my expectation of my own version of how I do art, then painted it onto people who I work with.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
What are you painting on me right now?
You know what? You've lived up to my version of painting upon you. Huh. I think.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which cool. I can't say about most people.
Okay.
So yeah.
We're halfway there. I'm doing good. Sweet.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying training him and watching him bitch all day. Loving that part. It's way too much fun. And I'm going to use this a little bit more now that we're getting close. Yeah. But B, also, I'm enjoying that we're becoming friends. It's been a very fun thing to play with. And watching that part grow is just as important as watching the other part grow.
I would say that I think we became friends very quickly.
Yeah, it took like a week or two just to like get used to each other.
Fully used to it.
And be like, all right, then you start nudging each other a little bit and you're like, all right, okay, I can goof off now. It's fine. I can be myself around you and then you can be yourself around me and it's perfectly fine.
Mm.
Like you come in and go fall asleep on my beanbag right away and I'm like, no, get your ass off here.
Yeah, here and there. I'm not too bad though. I haven't bitched too much.
No, you're actually really good.
Yeah.
You can put, and what's fun is like, that little tick that you have in your brain applies to training all the time. You always want to push yourself harder anyway. So I just have to give you the workout and watch you and then give you a little push and you go for it.
And like, even like, I think it was yesterday, we were doing the workout and you're like, all right, we're done. That's a wrap. And I was like, no, we're doing abs. And then boom, at the end we do abs. And it was a pretty, like, it was a solid little ab routine that we did. You know what I mean? And that's like that little extra mile. But I'm always looking for that. It's like, that's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm constantly, that's where my lack of satisfaction or my lack of enoughness, quote unquote, comes from. But it's not that I don't have enough physical things. Like, I don't care about the physical. I really value the mental component of it. Right. Okay. It's like, I was watching something where they were describing, I'm trying to learn more about nostalgia. I'm realizing how motivated I am by nostalgia.
Okay.
Johnny Harris.
Boom, see, Jordan, him and I watch the same YouTube, clearly.
I love when he drops in, just like, Duke, little background.
I'm but Sir Johnny Harris had a little piece. So he's a YouTuber. He worked for a company called Vox for a while. He does amazing animations. Now, I believe, starting a job with the New York Times. He's just a really interesting, cool storyteller, but you could tell he's well-read and just well-spoken and just talented. Anyway, he starts talking about nostalgia and like the mix between happiness and excitement and then some level of like melancholy, right? Like some, like that's where nostalgia kind of lives in between, right? And just how it continuously, it's like this very interesting fuel source that I'm realizing I'm running off of.
Okay.
And I switched from guilt and shame. That was my original fuel source, which I would say I learned from my Italian roots, as
right
all
here.
Three of us here know.
The trifecta of like, oh God, this is terrifying.
Jordan and I have a common experience, obviously. guilt and shame is like the Italian way.
Yeah.
That's like what we do. Do you want food? No, I don't want food. You have to have the food, right? Like, it's guilt and shame in every way.
The whole way.
Even in their kindness.
Why didn't you come see me? I love you so much, but you have to come.
You don't see me enough. No. It's like, you're just constantly guilting me into coming and see you, Nana.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Like, I love you, and I'm sorry that I don't see you often, you know? But you're always leading with an I'm sorry. There's always okay. And then part of that is a politics game. Like, if they offer you food, you have to say no, and then they're going to offer you it again, and then you have to say yes. That's like, that's the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
So it's a culture of guilt and shame, right? So that is like if I see that as like the oil of fuel sources, right? Like, it's not the non-renewable, horrible, bad for the environment, but very powerful, very effective, fastest to light. Easiest way to motivate somebody is guilt and shame.
Yeah.
Fastest way to get anything done. Fear.
Guilt, shame.
Fear, guilt, shame. Right. Fastest way to motivate any behavior. Secondary is now, that has shifted to me into nostalgia.
Okay.
And I don't fully understand it yet. I know that it's been around for a minute because I'm obsessed with documenting everything. And it's maybe part of a fear that I'm going to, like, my brother says this when he started his podcast or why he wanted to write a book originally. He's like, I'm worried that I would lose all my memories.
Okay. Interesting.
Right. I don't feel worried about losing my memories. I actually just learn from my, like, I feel like I can gain perspective around my memories or around the use of a tool like a camera.
Okay.
That enables me to capture sound and light. Right. And just capture a moment. Like, even the story you made earlier where I'm doing the last burpees on the stupid card challenge in the Charo special, I'm doing the last burpees on the last ace. And you mentioned, you made a comment, you're like, fuck, your shoulders look like you were like really ripped by the end of that. And I was like, oh. So then it's only through the reflection of that lens where I get to see that moment captured, where I can give myself the pat on the back, like, oh, yeah, I did do the work.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But ironically, in the actual doing of it, like the second the workout ended and I'd gotten to the end, I was like, I kind of like cheated on the reps a little bit. Like, I kind of, I could have pushed harder.
23 minutes could have been 22.
So I have like I have like a little bit of that guilt and shame, but then boom, through the lens or through capturing or telling the story and then realizing that story now has value for other people as well as me. Most importantly, me, right? That's really where I get like stay motivated is now all of a sudden has turned into this like secondary half step fuel source.
Okay.
And I don't really know what's next. Like, obviously the answer is like, well, and part of that answer is like unconditional love. meaning I love myself and I love everything that happens in all ways unconditionally.
And I don't need anything else to fill that
And
tank.
I need nothing else other than I can be a Zen Buddhist monk and essentially just be filled with love and energy and light that just shines into my life and into my emotions and my heart center or whatever the fuck. Right?
Is that possible with this day and age right now? That's a good question, though.
I mean,
we're so busy looking outside at everything that it's really hard to just stop and look at nothing.
Well, that's in their world.
Yeah.
That's probably the symptom of such.
Yeah.
We're constantly externalizing.
Yeah.
And so in that externalization, we're always seeking, because that's what externalizing in a sense means. It's you're hunting for something
to fill a void, make you feel happy. Yeah. It's always,
and you're always like in a hunter-gather mode. Hunter gather like a squirrel.
Yeah.
Right. But if you're in a like generate mode, which in a sense is coming from some level of internal, right?
Yeah.
Because you could generate energy. I could generate happiness by thinking happy,
yeah,
feeling happy and being happy essentially, and kind of in that order in a way sometimes, right? You can move through that feeling and then generate that. But at what point do you like, then at some point you reach the limits, unless you're a breatharian and you believe in that. I'm not fully convinced.
Okay.
But at some point you have to come back to the hunter-gatherer. And so we're like, we are the monkey and the monkey mind, but at the same time, we're also this like enlightened, self-aware human.
Yeah. So I did a 10-day Vipassana thing.
Yeah.
Where it was the only time in my life where I had no external.
Which is fucking my nightmare.
It honestly shocked my brain.
Yeah.
For the first 3 days, I thought I was talking to 10,000 people. But by the end of it was the first time that I actually felt pretty much calm, and I hadn't reached out to anybody or anything because you can't.
Yeah.
And that, I think it probably had the whole ayahuasca feel. I came out of there a changed human.
Mm.
For the first time I hadn't reached out, I realized I can just pause and stay in.
Mm.
To stay like that is almost impossible.
Would you say that so let's say you had 1,000 humans in your mind, or 1,000 versions of Charo in your mind. Would you think you dwindled it down over time to like one or two?
I think that's what calmed down my anxiety. So I used to be
anxious.
It got better as it went. Obviously, as I got older, I started to understand. But that was like a quick flick in my brain that I was like, oh, there's not all those voices don't count. I need to talk to that person, that one.
I love how it's a quick flick. It's like 10 days.
10 days. Absolute torture in my 12 mind. Hours sitting down. You can't look to people in the eyes. You can't talk to anybody.
You can't write.
You can't write. You can't poetry, do any exercise. Nothing.
You can't even exercise.
No, nothing.
Oh, I hate
you
that.
Wake up at 4:30, you start meditating, and it's called anapana. So you have to think about the tip of your nose for 3 days.
Oh, God. This sounds so brutal. Like, I don't understand.
This is all I had for 3 days.
Wow.
But it's a technique they use to sharpen your mind so you can focus on the smallest little things inside yourself.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm good at that naturally. Like, I don't know. I have like a different form of meditation. Like my meditation is more of like, it's like in the same way that people rest and then I active rest.
Yeah.
I'm really good at the active rest. I'm really good at the active meditation. And what I mean by that is not that I'm like, I'm not like a sit in lotus position, like figure out my problems by just sitting there and thinking. I'm actually significantly more, I love like to pace, or I love to walk, or I love to do a little something that's just kind of taking my physical body and putting it into like a rotative state, where it's just kind of moving and moving and moving, and it's moving the energy through me. And then now all of a sudden the thoughts are kind of streaming through like a waterfall kind of thing, you know?
I think everybody's got different ways of doing stuff.
Yeah.
I'm a guy who can't stop moving, if you didn't know that yet.
I mean, I've watched you.
Yeah, I'm like, I gotta give it.
You're literally tapping the table like,
Yeah, but I used to be way worse than I am now.
Yeah.
I used to be hyperactive, couldn't control my brain, couldn't figure it out, couldn't understand.
Meditation. And you would say Vipassana is like probably the, like, if you had to give it one, like, there's life before and life after. If you had to pick one in your whole life, would you say Vipassana is probably it?
Right now, it'd be one of the biggest ones.
Wow.
Yeah. So for me, I came out of there like, what the hell just happened? And for like 8 months, I was super focused, super calm.
Mm.
And then as life got back to the pace, my brain's now, I sit down for 20 minutes, I'm talking to 18 people again.
Mm.
So that one person's like struggling to figure out how to get the voices away again.
Mm.
So I want to actually go back. They do like smaller versions, but it's close. So you can go back for 4 days, 5 days. After you've done the first one, you can go in for a couple of days. A
couple days,
yeah. I would go back right now in a heartbeat. If somebody said you can go on Friday and I'll be there for 4 days, I'd be like, cool, I'll see you later.
I feel like you can do that.
It's different at home.
Oh, no, I'm not saying do it at home.
Oh, no.
You have to leave.
Yeah, but I think, I don't know if that, I'll have to check and see if the center's open with the COVID rules?
Because I feel like, I mean, if I went go-karting the other day.
True.
If that's open, Vipassana is probably open. You can't even look at people.
Yeah.
How much more socially distant could you be than, like, I can't even look at you?
I can't look at you. I need to look down the whole time. This is kind of weird. It's actually kind of funny. The first time I make eye contact with somebody, you're like, oh my God, hi, how are you?
Oh my God.
You're like,
I miss
the
love of my life.
Yeah, you're like, this is the, it's like the Ritz cracker thing from Eddie Murphy. Have you ever seen that? Eddie Murphy, raw or delicious?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, go for it.
Oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever had. It's because you haven't eaten in 10 days.
Yeah.
You're like, this is so much connection. This is the best thing ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess it's like, yeah, it's just a calming of the nervous system in every way.
Calming of the nervous system.
Calming of the mind.
Not having any other distractions, no cell phone, no nothing, just sitting down for that long.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if that ever happened, like, naturally. Like, what is it about that people are so drawn to? And if it ever, well, I guess hibernation is kind of a version of that. Like, bears hibernate.
Yeah.
It's kind of a different reason.
A few animals do that. But, I mean,
frogs hibernate, too.
I think, what was it? Most animals run on 2 hours of work a day and resting for 22.
No way.
A lot of them.
We ever watch a cow? Or just
all but all he's doing is this. He's not really.
But that's still working. That's like they're processing food.
They're not constantly eating. Keeping themselves busy. They're just kind of like.
It depends what busy means, I guess. Right?
Yeah,
like how do you define busy?
Like I say,
I watch a squirrel. He's working all day.
He's definitely running around.
Squirrels are definitely intense.
Yeah.
Intense animals.
But
birds?
I mean, they're moving around. They're just playing and having fun. They're not actually like trying to keep themselves working. This whole work thing is very interesting.
I mean, the idea of work in and of itself is kind of a human concept.
Yeah. What is a human concept? You have to work.
I mean, it is and it isn't. Like, a beaver works. Like, we would describe a beaver who's building a dam as working.
Back before because
we don't look at what the beaver is doing in the dam, which is creating both a home and his, like, winter plan.
Yeah, but aren't we all like aren't I working so I can pay rent so I have a home and a winter plan? Like, isn't that part of this? Isn't that the same coin?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, in a way, I mean, I'm doing other things with it, and I have the luxury of even more. Right, clearly.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Have you not seen my privilege? No, I mean, okay, I'm making a joke. I acknowledge my privilege. But a beaver does work. Like, I from my definition of the word work, I see many animals working.
They're work,
quote unquote.
So
they're living as
they're
living.
They're working to live. They're working to just do. Okay, this is my part. I need to get food. I need to get a roof over my house and then everything else.
Is that 9 to 5?
Yeah, no, because you're working to pay taxes. You're working to pay for something that's like.
Well, we've socialized to have other layers of our contribution, which also give us other layers of freedom that squirrels don't have.
True.
Yeah.
But if you were to just tell me, like, here's a plot of land, you can live there forever, and I'd be like, oh, this isn't so bad, and I don't have to pay anything.
You know what the crazy thing is, though? I feel like that exists.
Where? It does exist. We're working on it.
No, just do it.
Yeah.
I feel like there's so much bullshit out there. Like, oh, I want to live in community. I'm like, great, go find a community and live in it.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, what more do you need? It was like, well, wait a second. No, I have to build it. And it's like, ah, that's different.
If you build
you have this ego need to build a community, make and own the land. Now it's different. But if you want to just go live off the land, dude, you could go walk in a forest. Even if it's owned by somebody else, you can walk through and start foraging. You will find a way.
Well, it's actually the story you posted was kind of interesting about the guy who just built his little house over here.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And he'd been there for like 2 years?
Alex Melky story. Exactly.
Yeah, he'd been there for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a guy, basically, the story goes, basically, this MTL blog journalist, his name is Alex Melky. He lives right outside of this kind of, it was an abandoned lot that was yet to be constructed and turned into condos like everything else in Montreal. And with noise and cones and all the things that come with Montreal. Anyway, long story short, a homeless man builds a shelter. And for 2 years, basically lives in this shelter. Once it got taken down by the cops, and then he rebuilt it again. And it literally had art on the walls. Like, it had art and a chimney,
and
like a roof. And it was like legitimately a mini shack house. But yeah, I mean, he was finding a way.
I wonder how many hours he worked a day.
Less than most people.
Oh, way less than most people.
It, quote unquote, in the way that he would see work.
Yeah.
Right?
Or that we would define. How does he go get money or create for so he can have food and do all that stuff?
Yeah.
I'd be curious to find out because the expenses he has is less. So he doesn't have to do so much.
Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe he would look at it as like if he needs to panhandle to get money, he works even more hours because he's out there waiting for clients, call it clients. But in a way, that's kind of more similar to the animal work, which is resting work, right? Like you're just. you're standing on your limbs or you're sitting on your body without like moving it much. And by doing that in that place, you get food.
Yeah, it works. But I mean, yeah. I don't know. Interesting conversation. I don't know how we wound up in this conversation again.
It's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, we're like,
so this whole podcast is just a rabbit hole. People ask me, like, what are you talking about on the podcast? I'm like, honestly.
We start with coffee and we finish over here.
Yeah, we just get fueled by Dispenza, good Italian roasted coffee.
That's the reason why I talk so fast.
Yeah. You know, I never really thought about the fact that when we talk about Italian coffee, generally coffee does not grow in Italy.
No, mostly.
It's only roasted there.
Yeah, it's roasted and
they have like a particular way of picking specific beans and then roasting them. Way.
It's also more, I guess it started a big part of their culture. So people think about it that way.
Isn't that funny though? That Italians have literally taken something that does not grow in their country and or generally, right, or not mainly grown in their country. It could grow in their country in a sense, I guess, but not proper. And then just co-opted that as like, oh, this is our
culture. They made it theirs. This is mine. This belongs to me now.
Yeah. Even spaghetti is kind of like that. Like, was it noodles first or was it spaghetti first?
And where did it come first? Did it come from China first or was it from...
Who knows?
Yeah, these are questions.
Well, I mean, this is where Marco Polo was, that bridge, right?
Yeah, what?
Marco Polo was the bridge between the East and the West.
East and West, but so did he bring it back and say, hey, I found the recipe?
I would imagine that every Italian says, clearly we brought it to them.
True.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's probably the story that we would tell in our own history books.
Yeah.
If Italy was in charge of writing history books,
a pure Italian person right here, they'd be yelling at us.
They'd be like,
what do you mean? This is mine.
And pasta, we invented it.
Yeah, you can't be saying that. I'd be like, oops, sorry, no.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But it's funny how we make things ours.
Oh, constantly.
Everything.
But animals do that too, right? Like a beaver says, this is my dam.
They'll fight for it.
Right? A squirrel says, this is my nest. A bear, same thing. Like they do have territory.
And they do have their lands and like wolf packs will like literally have
their hunting massive grounds. Lions have their pride in their area. Like it's funny that like we do naturally divide the world regardless of like it is the most natural thing that we made countries and it's not even like country. Like we've gotten down, we've literally done this on the most macro of scales. Like, okay, let's make countries and call this whole ocean this ocean and blah, 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 and all the different things that go with that. And then at the exact same time, we do that in the most micro of ways. Okay, this is your plate and this is my plate. This is your fork and this is my fork.
Yeah, don't touch my fork.
Yeah.
Don't touch my plate.
Exactly. and then we have this like barrier around our stuff and we have this possession feeling that we're taught in a way, but that is natural as well.
It does, now that you bring it up, it does make sense that it is natural.
It has some natural.
They do it for survival.
Yes.
On most of the things, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, some of it we're doing is for survival.
Some.
And other stuff is for fashion and hair.
Mainly fashion. And for the gram.
Doing it for the gram all the time.
Yeah. It's a balance between doing things for the gram and not doing things for the gram. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm learning about the gram. I learned about different grams in my life, but I'm learning about that.
Jeez.
I was like, oh yeah, that's a good one.
That is a good segue to the funny paths that we take to get to where we're at. You know, I've learned a little bit about you over the last 55 days or whatever, 60 days maybe that I've known you or something like that. When you look at your past, do you ever feel like, shit, I wish I had started sooner?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I do.
Because you're 42.
Yeah, I'm 42. Thank God I don't look like 42 and I don't act like a 42-year-old.
You do not act like a 42-year-old at all.
Yeah. Thank God. Knock on wood for that one. I'm very, very lucky to have this shell that acts really well with everything else.
You say lucky, but you do the work.
I do the work and I've been doing it for a long time. And I also like, I think we all have a superhero skill and everything else. This is definitely one of mine. Like my body and my doing the work and also having a body that's physically capable of doing it.
We're definitely privileged in that way. Yes.
Yeah, like my I do this a lot when I see people that can't do it. I'm grateful. Like I'll do a little prayer. I'm like, thank you for giving me the body I have and the skills I have.
I find it the mark of the most privilege. Like I think the most privileged thing in the entire world that we do is probably some level of like working out willingly.
Yeah,
The fact that we willingly like take a kettlebell and swing it and move it around purely for the we want to be in shape and look good and attract the opposite sex and blah, 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 whatever and other motivation you might have. But it's so unbelievably hilarious to me and also sad to me because I would imagine there's somebody who's like starving in a third world country, and I hate the term, but you know, in Africa somewhere, that is like literally
begging for food.
Yeah, and like just starving and like just laboriously, you know, working in sugar fields or trying to grow food or like farmers essentially in many scenarios. The fact that we willingly just show up to places and run on treadmills and like essentially use an enormous amount of energy to go to no real specific outcome other than our own pleasure and or our own madness is pretty remarkable.
I mean, most people do it for certain things.
Sure.
Like, yeah, well, how spoiled are we? We get to train every day and we have meals that come to our house.
I'm as spoiled as possible. I haven't walked into a grocery store or a mall in forever.
We don't have to do anything. Yeah. We sit there, I'm like, oh, this is great. I have food, I have everything I need, and I'm going to go work out twice a day.
And we're like in the middle of a pandemic, and it's like things show up right at my door.
Everything's easy as could be. Weirdly enough, the pandemic's probably been one of the best times of my life.
Yeah, it's weird.
But
and at the same time, I feel like we keep being fed this story that like a lot of people are suffering. But then when I kind of look around, I'm like, are they?
But that's our circle. I think it's because we can only see as far as we can see sometimes. Until then, if you were to go out in other places, you'll be like, oh, fuck, shit, sorry.
No.
We're lucky because we're part of our own bubble. So I see you every day, so I'm feeding off
you.
But
is that lucky because I can kind of create my own bubble? Again, I know that's built upon the privilege of where I'm born and blah, 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 color my skin, male, blah, 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 yeah, get it. Yeah, all those things.
But you also built what you have now.
Yeah, but like it's what not, I'm trying to say is there's tons of white homeless men too.
Tons. And there's I know, but I also know a lot of people are going through terrible times.
Really?
So
well, like, I guess it's, you worked a lot.
I worked in the restaurant industry forever. Yeah, so I know like some of my close friends, the restaurants are having a hard time. How do they get stay open?
Gym owners,
yogis, trainers, yogis, all these studios that have to pay rent. Like they're paying, and rent is fucking expensive. Like a restaurant.
In Montreal, it's not that bad. But yeah, compared to other places.
But it's not that bad, but if you're paying it and you're not making any money, it's fucking expensive.
100%. Yeah.
Like all the restaurants in the old port, it's like $40,000 that you have to cash out, and you're trying to keep this spot open so you can survive for next summer, hopefully. Maybe. And the restaurant industry is already survival of the fittest.
It's already a survival of the fittest. Montreal has the most restaurants per capita, essentially, or whatever it is. And then now add in pandemic, code red lockdown indefinitely.
All
and
kinds
essentially,
of,
you know.
Most of the city, some of the restaurants would just survive on Grand Prix weekend alone.
I believe that.
Yeah, like I know restaurants that
are high-end restaurants, like the one on the corner of, what is it, Newport it's called or whatever, the corner of like Maisonneuve and Crescent.
Okay.
Like a restaurant like that.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
not even that, like Buonanotte used to survive on Grand Prix alone. All those big bars, like all the super clubs, all the restaurants, they double, triple the prices, have people coming in, spending so much ridiculous money. I know, as a waiter, I had a great time doing it.
Where? At Buonanotte?
No, at Gelmanger.
Oh, yeah.
I worked at a lot of, like, part of my past was working in restaurants for a long time. Yeah. I did, like, 18 years of restaurants.
Mm.
So, yeah, I got to see all that fun part of the world. And then
I haven't even been working for 18 years.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. We were talking, I was like spitting out a story and you're like, it's true. You're that old. I'm like, yeah, that's me. I'm that old.
Well, yeah, you've got 10 years on me.
I've got 10 years on it and I've got 10 interesting years, which is fun. Like I haven't stuck to one job. I've traveled the world. I've tried this. I've been a drug dealer, which we could probably get to later on.
Well, go right in.
Yeah. I've abused myself in many, many ways. Thank God. I don't know how I keep on coming back and I'm physically capable of doing what I can still do.
Mm.
Sometimes that actually shocks me because the abuse I gave to myself was disastrous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was never as much as I'm self-abusive in the sense of like, I'm always kind of pushing my own limits. I've not been super self-abusive from the perspective of alcohol or like harm to my body in that particular way.
Well, we were talking
generally
about that
before. Okay. Yeah.
We all have our own ways of abusing ourselves.
Yeah. Like I've definitely had maybe a couple too many poutines.
Yeah,
maybe
I definitely had like all,
or
the,
maybe a couple too little putins. That's another way of.
If
seeing
you
life.
Go down the list of addictions, like it's always people talk like porn addiction, sex addiction, alcohol, drugs, video games. I've had a phase with all of them, and I've had my like, okay, this is time to switch. I'm like, what am I going to fill that phase with now? And then eventually it came to okay, I went abused health. I got into volleyball. I was doing 60 hours a week sometimes at beach volleyball
because
I needed it so badly.
Mm.
And then, but that led to this. So everything leads to something else.
We always have some addiction. My addiction right now, probably social media in some way.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, I was looking at my phone, I'm like, oh, crap, you open your phone 147 times a day just to look at Instagram?
Are you really at 147?
Yes.
I want to know, okay, shit. This is no bueno here.
You're going to be like, oh,
This is no bueno. Okay,
I don't even think that that's a statistic that I'd want to see on my phone.
Every time I look at it, I think we have to see this. Yeah.
Okay, wait, what's...
It should be like a feature when you open your phone. It's like, this is the...
If you go under settings, I think it is.
Time, yeah.
Yeah, well, at one point I got an app blocker. I was like, it's the only way I can teach myself not to go through.
I have the app blocker, but I constantly do whatever.
Yeah, you're like, nope. I need to unblock my app blocker. Today I've picked up
my phone 106 times.
Yeah, and still early.
Yesterday, 135. Day before, 119. 82 the day before, Sunday. 88 on Saturday.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah.
A little bit better on the weekend because you're busier and you're spending time in...
Ironically, it's just kind of doing
or
less.
Or you're up north doing something surrounded by people that take the traction from the phone away.
But actually, no, this weekend I was literally home the whole time. Yeah. I was alone almost the entire time.
Yeah. Maybe you opened it less often.
But I was just scrolling through it for longer periods of time.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. You might have opened it less, but spent more time on it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, crap.
Well, Instagram is number one right now. YouTube is number two. Facebook is number three.
I had Hinge on there. I took that off.
Oh, okay. Those apps are horrible.
I mean, it's pandemic. How the hell are you going to go meet somebody right now? Walking on the street and going to
allegedly
a bar.
we have gatherings.
Allegedly,
I'm not going to talk about that right now.
That's another part of everything.
Yeah. That's too fresh. We can talk about drug dealing because that was years ago. But
all right, cool. We can talk about that.
We can't get into the alleged things.
Addiction. Yeah, I mean, the base of addiction is where you, like, from such a young age, you'll acquire things that you're lacking and missing, and you're trying to go find it in other places.
Man, you're also lacking control over it.
Yes.
You're essentially doing it through almost like a nervous tic of some kind or some level of comfort, like a numbness
to numb yourself,
or a need for some comfort. It's a comfort.
You're looking for something. You now got to fill that void.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to the bathroom and I'm going to have nothing to think about. Oh my God. What am I going to do? Bring my phone.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I try bringing a book in there sometimes.
I should put a book in my...
I did that for a while. I put a little bookshelf next to my bathroom, so the books were always there.
Yeah.
And then I'd just be like, oh, okay. And I just read and things that are like small
stories. But is that not another just the same thing? Like, is that another version of like, let me
just sit here and poo? I mean, yeah. I'd probably spend less time on the toilet bowl if I didn't take anything in there with me.
But 100%.
It's what it leads to, right? So the thing is, how often do you go into the bathroom, like, grabbing your phone, and then, like, you leave, and then maybe you still kind of, you have, like, unfinished business, or you stay longer because of the phone, right?
Well,
and so,
of course.
Like, it creates, like, and then it also creates, like, a habit of using your phone more, right? So if you go in there, and
habit of association.
What I do is National Geographic's.
Okay. Right?
Because I could choose, like, this feels like I have some time, I can read, like, a 4-page article. Or I don't have a lot of time, and I'm going to read, like, a 1-page article.
Like,
but then what it does is that it teaches me that, like, reading is something that I like.
It is. And I'd much rather read a book and something that's going to give me that kind of information than scrolling through.
But we're just judging the information. Like, what we're just doing is saying that the information, like, for example, oftentimes I'll check my stocks.
Yeah.
And I don't even check all the stocks I own. I check things that I'm just watching. So sometimes I'm just boom, and then I'm reading financial news. Is that not like it's another form of reading? It's another form of information intake.
True.
It's just
yeah.
And we're like demonizing one versus taking the care.
I think
of the
we're
other.
More demonizing the social media stuff right now.
Well, I agree with that.
And at the same time, it can be used properly.
I agree with it, but I'm just playing I agree.
Yeah.
And I'm playing devil's advocate where we're doing is trying to say that one thing is healthier than another thing. But it's like that's like saying
again,
like,
which information
fries
are you putting
cut this
in?
Way versus fries cut that way or healthier? It's like they're
like
both.
Which food am I putting in my body or which information am I putting into my brain?
Yeah.
Like so when I went through like a little weird life exchange thing and I was having a hard time, a friend of mine came in and one of the things he told me to do first, he goes, clean out your Instagram.
Yeah.
Take anything that you shouldn't be putting in your brain off your pages so it doesn't appear anymore. So
like just like unfollow people.
Unfollow people, pages. Like I used to follow obviously hot girls and all these things that are.
Yeah, I kind of don't follow any of that.
Now I don't anymore. Yeah. Now I follow my friends and I have like if you look at my thing, it's all healthy input. So my brain's always getting in healthy input.
For me, it's I follow, it's like my job. But like my Instagram is kind of like more about my job and like what my understanding of human psychology and trends than it is like my actual pleasure.
Okay.
Like I don't care. Like I don't follow like a cool car thing or whatever. I mean, there's some level of like I follow like cool cinematography and videography type things. You know what I mean? Where I find some inspiration. And that's where in certain scenarios where I'm like comparing my, the quality of my content versus the quality of their content. Now all of a sudden I enter a diminishing mode, right?
Yeah,
not diminishing them, diminishing self. Yeah. Again, I very, most of my battles are with me. Like as most people would say, are all your battles, but I'm just like fully aware that like, I have no care for what other people are feeling and experiencing. Not, I care about them, but I'm not judging them for it. Or judging them like for, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm really just measuring where I'm at or how I feel about my own art or my own creation or my own time, you know, my own.
I find that sometimes misleading for other things too, because we put something on a pedestal or ahead of us.
Yeah.
And we're like technically there. We just have to go a little bit farther or just invest a little more time. Like I did that with a, yeah, so 2 years ago when I became time, a, yeah, 2 years ago when I became a personal trainer, like when I really decided to go in, I started looking at personal trainers and I was stopping myself from succeeding because I was too, oh my God, they're way ahead of me.
Yes. I was, yeah, we get paralyzed.
Yeah, I was like shitting my pants. I'm like, oh my God. And then one of the guys who I followed, I ended up meeting and we were talking and I'm like,
oh, I'm just as good as him.
I'm like, I've been here this whole fucking time. Like, yeah. What the fuck's wrong with me?
But that's, see how we are motivated. Like we can get paralyzed by motivation and inspiration. And then we can also get like somehow we play this dynamic where it's like, oh, I'm like better than you or I'm further than you. And yeah, we, and with that that competitive mindset is so natural to our way of thinking. And we all have it in common. And we just like, we pretend that we don't sometimes.
Yeah, no, right? It's like, there. It's, do you, it's have control, there. Do you have control over it to not exaggerate with it?
Yeah.
To go like, oh, and same thing. Do you have control over yourself to not trample yourself and say, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
Trying to find that nice fine line in the middle.
Yeah.
That whole conversation, am I enough?
I think, well, yeah. The answer is like, yes and no. But define enough. What is enough meant to be? What enough to what? Survive forever? Live endlessly? What is enough?
Enough is the filter you've created in your own brain to make you understand
whether or not I'm good enough.
Yeah. So whatever, I think this is a cool way they kind of explained it. So everything you've realized in your life makes your own net, and then you're getting caught in your own thoughts of your own net. So
yeah,
my, like something that happened, I'm going to leave a mark. It'll leave one line this way and then another mark this way. And then eventually it just leaves so many things on the table that nothing will go through naturally. You have to fight it before it goes through. So you're always trying to filter your way through these. Can I get this through easily? Nope. I have to fight something because it has, I have a last, somebody said something a long time ago that I'm not good enough, or some, I did something and I failed and I'm not going to try again. Those are the filters that you have to go through and eventually just be like, okay, so can I look at this often enough to understand that it doesn't belong there? I'm going to take that filter away. So now I can let bigger chunks through easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that. I mean, I feel, yeah, I don't know. I'm like, I'm really still in the inquiry of what it is taking for me to go from fear, guilt, shame, fuel. Nostalgia fuel seems to be like this kind of halfway point because it's still built in some level of melancholy, but that feels balanced. Like that feels okay. Like I don't know that even the renewable source doesn't have some level of like 50-50 ish balance between, I don't want to say happiness and fear, right? You know what I mean? Like there's some level of like highest excitement and joy and bliss and all those things. And then some level of like, not joy and not bliss and not whatever. It's like saying I can't appreciate the rain or the sunshine without the rain.
Yeah.
Like there's just no way.
It's amazing.
That we separate contrasts essentially.
It's great to, yeah. I think sometimes you need to hit the bottom to understand the top.
We absolutely.
If you don't hit bottom, then you're just like, ugh, this, it's like I've hit bottom many times and that feeling of coming back out and then looking back and being like, oh shit, that was a way back ago. How did I do that? Then you can track back and understand how you became a better version of yourself and touching everything else.
Yeah, but see that tracking back piece, that's so like valuable to me right now.
Yeah, but I think it's
valuable. This is what this podcast is about.
I think it's valuable to everybody because you can look back, like we'll look back in 100 days, you can look back and you're like, oh shit, that really did work.
Mm.
I was actually, so Matthew McConaughey was saying something, it's like, it goes amazing.
Everyone's bringing him up.
Yeah, he's been doing a lot of fun work.
Well, it's because he had a book come out recently, so he did obviously a whole PR tour. Love how that happens.
Yeah.
It's amazing how effective PR is.
Same thing, Jay Shetty. Yeah. I was like following, there's
always the next one.
Everybody gives you a bunch of information. What you take from it is amazing if you get the right information.
Yeah, right for you.
Yeah, right for you.
By you.
I'm going to sit there and be like, do I want that? Do I not want that?
Yeah.
I'm not just going to let it all stay because then my brain's going to be overloaded with stuff that I don't need. I find unpacking my brain's been the best traveling, like the best experience of my life is unpacking what's in there. And there's a lot in there.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I feel like I'm less in like gather mode in that way. I'm always like absorbing information, But I think I kind of have gotten to a place where I'm not gathering it in the same way that most seem to be.
Okay.
Like, I feel like a lot of people are really, like, harvesting. Like, I need inspiration. Matthew McConaughey said this. And I'm like, oh, who cares what Matthew McConaughey said? Like, it's not... it's not that I don't respect... I think he's amazing in many ways. Like, you know, there's all kinds of amazing people. I just... I guess I don't find so much value in the externality of other people's experience.
So... I was having a talk with a friend of mine. I think it's because you have had success and built yourself up. So you don't need to reach out to somebody else to get value anymore.
I don't need external validation.
You don't need external validation. So now you're looking at stuff. Now you can actually analyze it and be like, do I need this? Is this going to help or anything else? As for when you hit bottom and you're like, oh, fuck, this is the worst place I've ever been. You're going to grasp onto everything.
Yes.
Anything that comes your way, you're going to be like, I need it all.
Rarely at bottom.
Yeah, but that's because you've spent...
So many times
building yourself up too. So you've created a whole version of yourself already.
Yeah. And I'm very quick to, like, I think I get knocked down, but I get back up quickly. Like I'm very rarely knocked down for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do, what that creates is another form of challenge, which is like some level of anxiety around just like there's some level of anxiety that comes with that replace. It's almost like, I don't have as deep of downs,
okay,
but I also don't have as high of highs. And so there's this low-grade anxiety that sticks, but there's also a low-grade happiness that sticks.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So like, and I term it anxiety because it's no longer a happening with an up and a down. It's just this consistent hum of like, well, you need to continue to maintain the things that you want to maintain in a way. Which is then some level of like responsibility, which is therefore some level of stress, which is therefore some level of like another responsibility. And then, you know, it's like a lasagna of like, no, but it really is. It's like a lasagna. Keeping with the Italian theme.
Keep it in our genes. We're good.
Yeah. It's a bit of a lasagna of like, I care about something, therefore I take responsibility over it. Therefore I stress about it. Therefore I take, you know, I care about it further, but then I take, you know what I mean? And that's kind of like, I seemingly, the way I can dissect the Italian mindset is some level of like, it's actually embodied perfectly in some level of lasagna. It's a lasagna of stress that they've experienced. My parents or, you know, past generations or ancestors. Have experienced some level of this kind of constant feed need to kind of like be responsible in some way, shape, or form to get to this level of like freedom and opportunity that we now have.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, if I can say all the future generations have done something really goddamn right for me to be where I'm at. Like, it's my job to tell stories for a living. It's so crazy to me.
Doing such a crazy hard work like they had to do before.
But I still do that hard work.
Yeah, but you're doing
that. I'm doing it purely out of like, well, number one, working out with you, that's like purely out of like, well, let me do it for the gram or do it for myself or do it for whatever version of that, right?
Yeah.
It's a bit of all of it. Like we have to admit like there's a part of me that says, yeah, and this is a strategy. It's a strategy. It is the best thing I can do for my business.
That's what I was about to say.
Me as a storyteller.
Yeah.
To essentially tell a phenomenal story that says I've invested in a long-term version of my body. It's consistent with all the rest of the elements of my story.
And that business that you've created for so long has built you too.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's a self-building man. It's like the statue of the man that's sculpting himself. It's exactly it's
been
that
like,
thing.
When we talk about it, you've been like, I've been doing this for so long. I taught myself this. That built you as a human. Yeah. And that this version of you that doesn't need the external help right now.
As much.
We all need that, but
you're also my personal trainer.
True. But I mean, the external help, like I said, is like reaching out for...
I don't need validation.
You don't need validation?
Yeah.
And you're not searching for an answer. You're not out there being like, I'll take anything that comes on this table right now because I'm in such a terrible place that I'll grab onto anybody's words and make them my own.
Yeah. And I'm good at like constantly bringing it back to my own like truth. Like even to certain times you're like, okay, we're going to do this and you're going to put the strap this way. And I'm like, nope. No, we're not doing that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's certain moments where you're like, okay, no, this is the path. Like, we're going to do this workout this way. And then there's certain moments where I'm just like, no, actually, my body's just not, we're not doing that.
You know what I mean?
Like, oh, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even so much for you or whoever. It's this, nope, that's not the way. Like, this is, and I'm just good at discerning and continuously discerning that. Because I don't, care or I don't take on the responsibility, the stress of pleasing other people.
But how many people do you think can do that?
Most can't.
Yeah.
But I grew up, it's because I saw the pain that like somebody like my mom had, where she's a perpetual people pleaser. And everything about the way that many Italians operate, and I won't just speak about my mom, but in many Italians operate, it's some level of like politics.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's all this game of like, well, they gave me this, they, you know, auntie blah, 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 bought, you know, cousin this much for Christmas last year. So this year I have to give the same to their kids. You know what I mean? Like, there's some level of politics. Like, even the way they go to weddings. Yeah, they show up with an open envelope and they're like, okay, based on how much you spent, we're going to give more or less money.
Yeah.
Period.
And then the next wedding, somebody's going to have a bigger wedding, and then people give them more money, and everybody's like, but do I have to give them more money? Because last time he gave me this much money.
So exactly. So like, what did they give us? And then it's almost like this log of like, well, when they came to my son's wedding, they only gave us $300, so we're going to give them $300 too. But it's wild that we're tracking all of this stuff.
And we keep it in there for generations.
But we're always tracking things. Like, it is such a human thing to constantly track everything.
Yeah.
We're counting beans all the time. I do that. I like am very cognizant of the fact that I know where the batteries are for my camera. I know exactly where all the things that I own, like, seriously, I'm really, like, I would say that I can probably track accurately 95% of the things that are in my ownership, quote unquote.
I can tell by your apartment.
Yeah.
It's everything's placed in a nice little spot. It's got its own little place.
Yeah. And some of it is just getting to that the time where it's going to have its place.
Yeah.
You know, there's new things that have come in. Yeah, like, okay, I'm still establishing the place.
Yeah.
But it's because I have this constant long-term vision of where it's going to end up.
Okay.
I think that's what it is. It's like, I know that it's like the day that my art here is done, the day that this apartment is done is probably the day I move out.
Yeah. You'll be like, okay, next one. Yeah. That's one thing I do find interesting about you is you always think so far ahead.
Yeah, I find that
also causes anxiety, by the way. Just saying.
Well, that's exactly. So that's back to it's because I'm able to look so far behind that I'm able to see patterns that are longer term than most people.
So what was it my friend explaining? And if you're reading books, so looking into the future creates anxiety. Looking in the past creates depression.
Yes, but it's your ability to look at past, present, and then future that determines your capacity to predict ecosystems. Like, I start to gain a very good internal guidance around, like, I can generally pick, I think everyone believes this, but I can predict certain things based on behavior that are leading indicators to other things, right? Now, that might just seem like, oh, well, you got this data point, so therefore that data point, right? Like, if I look at like search traffic of how many people are searching Tesla, for example, on Google Trends, that will probably be a predictor of Tesla stock price in some time lag in the future, right? Yeah. Whatever time lag that might look like. So that's, yeah, those are two data points. But I'm pretty good at also determining that not only from the present perspective of here's the data and here's the data that led to that present perspective, but just a very weirdly, oddly interesting outlook of like, yeah, I approach everything from this one core value, or it's one of my core values, which is long-term thinking.
Okay.
And so everything I do is this like long game where I'm like, okay, how am I going to make this the long game, and how am I going to make it sustainable for myself? Like, even this podcast, like, I know very quickly this podcast has a cost to me to operate.
Yeah.
Right now it's a burn rate, which I'm happy with. And I'm happy with mainly because it's fulfilling a level of nostalgia and it's allowing me to kind of connect with people who I really want to connect with in a deeper way. It's scaling intimacy powerfully.
Okay.
Which I love. But which is good both for business, but also more importantly for me. And that's where my podcast has now shifted. It's like my energy has shifted because I no longer care about the utility of this in my business. But it doesn't mean I don't see the value of doing it properly, doing it in a way that the art is done so perfectly, quote unquote, that it extends out into the world and does an incredible job of getting your attention on these phones.
Yeah.
Right. But I can like predict the moment where I can go from it's a burn to it's self-generating to it is more than self-generating. It creates excess essentially.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I'm really just good at seeing that time gap over and over and over again in almost everything I do. Like, I don't know why. It's like, I know how much investment it takes to get something from like a state of, let's say, not operating in any way, shape, or form towards a goal that I'm trying to create into self-sustainability and then into
profitability
or generating a generative state.
Yeah.
Because it's not always profit so much as it's like, because I do it with like physical ecosystems, like plants.
Yeah.
Or I'll do it with like side hustles all the time. I'm so quick at being like, oh, okay, if you do this thing, you'll probably be able to generate revenue. You'll like invest for this amount of time. This is your risks. These are the things. And you'll probably be able to do this.
Well, like when we're talking about coaching and you're like, hey, if you spend 6 months doing this way, you'll be able to have YouTube followers and everybody else and it'll become something eventually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'm dissecting that consistently and dissecting the risk of that consistently. That's the one thing I will say that came from my Italian upbringing.
Okay.
And the fear, shame, guilt mindset is that my ability to calculate risk, specifically the son of a lawyer and the Sicilian mom, my ability to calculate the risk that I am taking has drastically impacted the way that I see the world, the way that I can predict the world, and therefore the way that I bet on the world or on the happenings of the world.
Okay.
And I'm just, yeah, I'm so addicted to that game that it's some level of my actual addiction.
It's definitely
part
of addiction.
I'm a predictable gambler. Yeah. I'm a gambler but I never bet quick. I never, like, you'll never see, I'm never the black or red. You know what I mean? Other than, or if I am that, it's like, oh, I'm on vacation.
Yeah, I'm going to go do something. I'm going to just let loose for this little part over here.
I'm going to do 49, I'm going to take a 49, 51 bet against me, but see if I can win. You know what I mean?
I was talking about the filters before.
Yeah.
It'd been interesting to find out what influenced you and created that filter in your life. Like, yeah, definitely your parents have something. You just talked about that.
Yeah,
but I think like little circumstances made you go, okay, I need to start thinking this way instead of that way. Like those little turns.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, a lot of it from like some of the projects I've created, like the farm and those kinds of things, really came from the fact that I had watched way too many documentaries and then I started to understand existential risk. That's one component of what has informed me. But on a more, I think sports is another. Okay, I'm gonna make a dash for it this way. What is the likelihood that it's like I'm constantly calculating something. And we all are. Subconsciously, way more than consciously, right? Like
1,000%. If we did things consciously, we wouldn't.
We couldn't operate.
No.
So we're constantly in this calculation mode, like calculate. You know what I mean? Like if I jump, will I make
so
it?
So fast.
Like, it's unbelievably fast.
Yeah. Everything you're doing within point whatever seconds, you're like, hey, I'm making a decision.
Yeah. We're like the fastest computers on the planet.
Yeah. For now.
For now. Yeah. Well, maybe actually.
There might be something else out there that's a little bit quicker than us, but we don't.
It's definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
It's coming close.
It's there.
Yeah.
I think it's there. But it's not in mass. Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Like I think
it
like,
might be in mass use.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're getting there for sure. But the capacity. And here's what I'll say. I think we're here to birth it. I think that's our evolution. That's just another tangent. But
yeah.
Let me stick with the risk thing. Number one, yes, from my past. Two, learned a lot about existential risk from a global macro perspective. So I learned a lot of top-down stuff from generally storytelling perspectives, from like the perspective mainly of documentaries and then studies, lots of studies, TED Talks, those kinds of things, right? But then on a minute level, it's like probably, sports, some level of sports, gaming. Played a lot of games, right? Where these are flow states. You need
you just go
pure
in.
Flow states, and it's instinct. It's like you're constantly, because you're not just training. You're training fast twitch muscles. You're training certain things, but you're training some level of flow state mixed with what is the psychology of the other person, right? Like so, I used to play shooter games all the time. One of the shooter game I played was Counter-Strike, and it was like, okay, I know the dynamics of like the map where this person's gonna get there, and I'm gonna get here at X rough time. Right? Like I can calculate that based on the dynamics of the map. But then in the engagement of the other player and or the other team, now I have to have understanding of human psychology play a role. Right? Like, oh, he now knows I have this gun, so how is he gonna act based on that?
Yeah, you have to also know your own psychology.
Exactly.
Like so I have a big gun, I'm gonna go quicker.
Yeah. So you're constantly creating this like this. You're always creating like a yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, and this theory that I know I'm going to develop a lot more in my life. I think I'm going to write about it, I'm probably going to make videos about it over time, is this 51-49 split.
Okay.
Everything is just down to that freaking device. Like, everything can be boiled down to that, it seems. Like, even all the U.S. elections for president, 51-49. Almost the biggest split in almost every category of life somehow boils down to like a 51-49. Even life itself, even whether I'm a male or a female, quote unquote, traditionally, without getting into gender politics here,
yeah,
right. Whether I'm born, genetic male or genetic female, it was 50-50, 51. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's so crazy how everything is at that like perfect precipice of one way or the other, one way or the other, one way or the other, and I'm just seeing. And I don't want to get too deep into it because I know we're past the hour here, I think, possibly.
Yep. 75 minutes.
Oh, great.
Time flies.
Yeah, this is our version of like extra time where we get into ab workouts and stuff.
Yeah, he's like, okay, one more round, we're done, we're good.
Yeah. But it boils down to this 51-49. And that's what I'm seeing. And what I love, and just to wrap this up, you know, what I love about the way that you and I are engaging and the fact that you've come on as my trainer and mentor in many ways. At least in this particular category, is I love that I actually default 51-49 to your path. And I'm like, okay, we're doing what you're going to do. And here and there I'll interrupt, or here and there I'll be like, bitch, and moan and complain and be like, no, let's do this. Or sometimes I add, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes, as much as I'll like be like, let's switch it up, for the most part, I'm actually adding. And most of the time I'm like, no, I can go a little further, a little further, a little further. And that's the beauty of having accountability. You know, that's the beauty of having somebody who's in your corner. And there's a reason why the Floyd Mayweathers and every Olympian and every single athlete, everyone's ever made anything great, has always had people in your corner. So I appreciate you. I appreciate the work that you do. I appreciate the push that you give me, the fight that you give me. And I appreciate that you make fun of me.
It's part of having fun while doing it is probably the most important thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you can laugh after a workout, during a workout, you're like, oh, this was actually pretty good. I could do this again.
Yeah.
I'm basically making the pain enjoyable.
Yeah.
And then we get to do it again. Because if you didn't like it, you wouldn't come back.
That's true.
Well, you might come back because you're like that type of guy.
I'm that kind of guy. Because, yeah, I'm fueled by pain and more fear, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, I know. But I wouldn't come back long term.
No.
It wouldn't be sustainable. It would be 51-49. 49 would start to dwindle.
I think you took the extra 100 days, like made it to the 100 days, A, because you want the challenge, but with me because it's fun.
Yes, yeah. No, 100%. I had to make sure that we both resonated fully.
Yeah, that's it. We had a talk outside. We're like, let's hang out a little bit and see how this works.
Let's see how that happens.
It seemed to be resonating just fine.
Yeah, but enough to commit that it's not just like, oh, I'll come one session. It's like, no, we'll start 40 days right away.
Yeah, we start 4 days, and now we're adding sessions. We're like, so on Saturday?
Yeah, six days a week now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That being said, we got to prep for some other stuff. You have another session going on.
Yeah,
so thank you so much for all the things. Ladies and gentlemen, you know where the links are. You know where to find all the different things and all the different components of what's going on. If you got this far, go give Chero a follow. You know,
thanks.
Just find the links. He's in Instagram. He does some cool things. We make funny stories.
I think we're actually getting better at those two.
We are, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll see you in the next episode.